welcome back to the show. That's right. It's People Pleaser from a Blanket Fort recording studio in a one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood. Yeah, dude, it's People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer. First of all, I saw Superman over the weekend, as did many, many people. I wish it had a bigger opening weekend. I'm glad that they did $130 million, but like Jurassic World Rebirth did $320 million. And like, of course it did. That's a very lucrative franchise for Universal. But Superman can't get 200 mil. Superman can't get a measly 150. I'm glad it did 130. I think that it's going to continue to pile up because the word of mouth on this movie is excellent. And I'm without spoiling the film, I'm happy to say I really, really enjoyed it. And I give it a very high recommendation. I went and saw it with my brothers and my dad, and they all hated it. And it made my viewing experience kind of weird because I was sitting in the theater like, am I wrong? And the more I've sat with the film in the days after I saw it, the more I've just been like, no, I'm not wrong. And, you know, it's subjective. People are allowed to not like things. But also, I think that the family members I saw it with weren't really giving it a fair shot. I think that in order for this movie to work, you kind of need to be willing to open yourself up to it. You need to buy in. James Gunn is taking some massive stylistic swings here, but only in so much as it relates to the cinematic world of Superman that people are used to. Most people have only ever met Superman as a character through the movies. So they know Christopher Reeve, they know Henry Cavill, they know even Brandon Routh from Superman Returns, but they don't really know much about the Saturday morning cartoons or the comics. And those are what I grew up on. It's not hard for me to open myself up to a Superman movie. It's not a big ask for me to let it in and to be open to it, to buy in. I like Superman Returns. I like Man of Steel. I'm a big Man of Steel apologist. But anyway, I liked the movie. And what I'm talking about here is I don't think that it's a coincidence that the marketing for this film, the tagline on the poster, were the two words, look up. I don't think that's a coincidence. You've probably been seeing a lot of chatter online about this film, if you haven't already seen it, about whether or not the film is political, whether or not Superman is woke. Is Superman too woke? Are conservatives upset because Superman is too woke? Did James Gunn make Superman political? I will say, in my opinion, this movie is unapologetically political, and that's not tonally incorrect or wrong for the character of Superman. Superman is a political character. Most art is political. Most stories are political. Most characters are political in some way, shape, or form. Superheroes are absolutely political. Pretty much every single one. Like, what are you talking about? Captain America? You don't think that Captain America is political? It's so weird when people are like, please don't politicize my superhero movie that's always been political. The weird change that James Gunn could have made is to decide, I'm going to make a superhero movie, a Superman movie that is politically neutral, that has nothing to say about human morals and values. When you're talking about human morals and values, when you're talking about good versus evil, that is a political conversation. And that's just in the abstract. More specifically, when we're talking about a story of a literal alien who came to Earth from outer space and was raised as the adopted son of farmers from Kansas and had forged papers. They forged papers to make it seem like he was a boy from Earth. So he's an undocumented illegal alien who's raised in America and raised with values that are instilled in him by the most American people imaginable, the Kents. He decides that he's going to use his immense inherited power that comes from his birth parents to be the best possible person he can be. He's going to like go the opposite route that most people with massive power go, and he's going to do everything in his power to be the best possible person. He's going to fight for the marginalized and the underserved and do everything in his power to be kind and be good. There's no way to tell that story without being political. So yes, the movie is political, and I think James Gunn knows that. I mean, there's, again, without getting into spoilers, there's a lot of overt, very on-the-nose, up-to-date, current, biting political commentary that James Gunn is not being shy about and is not being subtle about. And I personally appreciated that. And again, also, I think the thing that made it hard for my brothers to buy into, and that it's probably hard for some people to buy into, is just the stylistic bigness of it, the cartoonishness of it, that it felt like a cartoon, it felt like a comic book, but that's what it's supposed to feel like. I think people are used to it feeling more like a movie and feeling a little bit more grounded and having the characters feel a little bit more like they would in quote-unquote real life, but the Superman universe was never meant to be real life. It was always meant to be a heightened version of things. Anyway, I don't want to get too far down the rabbit hole on Superman. I could talk about this forever, and I'm going to talk about Superman on the next episode of The Oneer Podcast, which is my other podcast that I do with my friend Kramer England, where we just talk about movies. We're going to do a whole hour and a half long deep dive on that Superman movie over on that channel, so go over there. That's not the movie I'm talking about today. Actually, the movie I want to talk about today is the movie Don't Look Up from Adam McKay that came out in, I want to say, 2020 or 2021. So the Superman poster and all of the marketing, when James Gunn first posted the teaser online, the two words were look up. And I genuinely believe that there's a good argument that could be made that James Gunn was not only just referencing, you know, Superman lore, that people say, look up in the sky. There it is, a bird, a plane, it's Superman. Those two words, look up. But actually, like, the way that this movie fits like a puzzle piece, like an answer to the movie Don't Look Up, and is sort of the continuation of that story, that's the movie I want to talk about, because I'm a huge Don't Look Up fan, and that movie was way more divisive with critics and audiences than this Superman movie is. The Superman movie, much to the chagrin of my brothers and my father, I'm sure, is being overwhelmingly praised and accepted by audiences and critics alike. People are really, really, really enjoying this movie. Don't Look Up, not so much. And the detracting responses for Don't Look Up came from both sides. There were obviously conservatives who didn't like the movie Don't Look Up because they felt it was liberals preaching environmentalism to them, and like, why? And obviously conservatives don't like that. They don't like being told that they're contributing to the death of the planet with industrialization and with their refusal to accept climate science. And also, I think there were just probably a good percentage of conservative people who just didn't understand the movie, who just plain were too dense to like get the social commentary being made, and they didn't like it for that reason. They just wanted it to be like more funny or more fun, and they just didn't get what the film was about. And then there were also a lot of left-leaning people who definitely get what Adam McKay is talking about in the movie, who definitely agree with Adam McKay, but who were still more or less like, yeah, we know. Oh my God. Like, calm down, dude. Stop yelling at us about how the planet's dying. Like, we get it. Oh my, yeah, Adam McKay, you're so smart. I literally had friends. I had friends who have my same political beliefs go, oh my God, I hated that movie. And I was like, why? And they go, it's like, I get it, dude. I get it. The planet's dying. Oh my God. I get it, Adam McKay. I just felt like he wasn't telling me anything new. And it's like, it blew my mind when that movie was out, how the responses to the film were the film itself. If you haven't seen this film, it's a pretty on-the-nose social commentary and satire about climate change. Adam McKay found himself reeling and feeling like, I feel insane, pointing out to people that, you know, we are way past the due date to do something about climate change, and nobody seems to care. I feel like I'm looking at a comet that's heading toward Earth, and the science has been confirmed that it is indeed on a collision course for Earth, and we are indeed doomed, and we actually have the timeline of when it's going to happen, and people just don't care. And when you point this out to them, they either call you a liar, or they call you hysterical, or they just go, yeah, I know, but chill, dude. It's across the political spectrum, because there are the people on the right who call you a liar, who say your science is off, or your science is made up or biased, or they just flat out say your science is a hoax, there is no comet in the sky. And then there's the people on the right who do get what you're saying, but it's not financially beneficial for them to run with your with your story. So they just kind of paint you with bad faith propaganda as an alarmist and a person. It's like, the planet's going to be fine. The planet's good. Yeah. We're heating up a little bit. Yeah, some ice caps are melting. Yeah, polar bears are dying. Species die, but not us, baby. We got money. We have capitalism. We're going to be fine. We built rockets and went to the moon. And then there's also people on the left who are like, yeah, I know. I believe climate science. I believe in climate change, but I'm tired. Please stop yelling at me about it, Al Gore and Leonardo DiCaprio. I don't want Leonardo DiCaprio to yell at me about climate science and then get on a private jet and fly to Jeff Bezos's wedding. Leo, fucking Leo, what the fuck are you doing, Leonardo DiCaprio, flying to Jeff Bezos's wedding on a private jet? Leo. And Adam McKay is talking about all of those people in that movie, and the response to the film perfectly mirrored the film. And I sat there watching the response to that film, feeling just as crazy as Jennifer Lawrence's character in the movie, being like, how does everyone not get that we're doing the thing that they're doing in the film? That the movie is so, yes, it's on the nose. Yes, it's unsubtle, but we live in a terribly unsubtle era. We live in a time that is just unsubtle. Okay, we live in a time where everything is so painfully and frustratingly unsubtle and on the nose that there's no way to talk about it without being just as unsubtle. A big reason why I haven't done an episode of this podcast in a while is because I've been bogged down in creative projects. I wrote a show for a theater company in Salt Lake City that's running right now all summer long. If you happen to be out in Salt Lake City, I wrote a show that's playing all summer long. It's a sociopolitical satire because, of course, it is. What else would you expect me to write? And it's called The Secret Lives of the Real Wives in the Salt Lake Hive. And it's a satire that uses the lens of Utah-based reality television, of which there is a lot, to examine the idiosyncrasies of culture in the state of Utah and the rising fascist Nazi state in America. And we do it as a musical with song and dance. And you know, I co-wrote it with two amazingly funny writers named Olivia Castadio and Penelope Kaywood. They crushed it. The actors are doing a great job. The show's open now. But that's the reason why I haven't been available to make new episodes of the podcast or, you know, making long form content for a while. Reason I bring that up is, while we were writing that show, we started writing the show in November and the show opened in June. We kept like writing scenes, and then the scene that we would write as like a satire of something that conservative culture might do, as like a heightening of something that a MAGA cultist might do, they would do it in real life after we wrote the scene. And then we would have to have a writer's meeting and we'd be like, okay, so do we need to heighten it now? Since they did the thing that we wrote, do we have to, like, I have a whole storyline in the show where all of the husbands of the girls who are the, you know, all these women are like on a reality show called The Secret Lives of the Real Wives in the Salt Lake Hive. And their husbands are all going to alpha training camps, you know, these camps that conservative men go to where they spend thousands of dollars to be yelled at and to be taught how to be a man. I wrote in there like that they pay $20,000 each to be a part of it. And one of my, like, at one point in a writing meeting, someone was like, that number seems a little bit exaggerated. Like, maybe we should make it a little more realistic. Like, they pay like $10,000. And I was like, oh no, if you look up the story, it is $20,000. Like, the real number is 20,000. These actual camps that actually exist, men are actually paying $20,000 to go to these boot camps to learn how to be more alpha and to be men. And it's like, the only way I could satirize it is to like maybe bump it up to like 50 grand. But at that point, I think people in the audience would just kind of go, well, this just sounds like the writer's just making stuff up. Whereas at $20,000, it's like, hey, by all means, go home and Google this and check to see if I'm lying. And I'm hoping people go home and go, oh my God, that really happened. And it's like, yeah, I did an episode on this podcast about how we live in a post-satire world and how it's really hard to satirize current culture because of how terribly unsubtle it is and because of how over the top the MAGA cult is. There was a moment when we were writing the show and I said to my co-writers, I said, should we build in a story arc about Trump and Elon Musk breaking up? Because we know they're going to break up, but do we think they're going to break up before the show opens or after the show opens? Like, do we think we can time it right? And we decided not to build that into the show because we didn't know if it was going to happen. And we knew it would happen, but we didn't know when it would happen. And then it wound up happening like a week before we opened. And I was like, ah, fuck. I was like, I knew they were going to break up. I knew that was going to happen. So I wrote in like a couple quick lines about it. That's what it's like trying to write social satire in the current world is it's so hard to stay ahead of the curve when the curve is this ridiculous, this unsubtle, this on the nose. And Adam McKay, there's a great podcast about the movie Don't Look Up called The Last Movie Ever Made. And it was about how, you know, in the middle of them making this movie, the COVID pandemic happened. They got shut down. Then they were quarantined in a hotel. And like, it was how they were like one of the last movies still operating in production during, like, they pushed through and, you know, they had like a quarantine cast and crew who pushed through to get the movie made. And they made this podcast about it. And they had, since all of the cast and crew were all sequestered in the same hotel, they had access to everybody to be like, hey, in your downtime, come and do some interviews for the podcast. Great podcast called The Last Movie Ever Made. And in that podcast, Adam McKay talks about this exact problem, how he would write a scene that would be like an exaggeration of something that the Trump administration could potentially say about climate change. And then they would do something crazier than the scene he wrote on like the day before they were supposed to shoot the scene. And he would have to like call his team and be like, well, fuck, what do we do now? Like they just did it. There's a scene in the movie Don't Look Up where Jennifer Lawrence causes a massive riot at a restaurant and people are like throwing chairs through the windows and like, you know, burning cars and all this stuff. And the day before they were supposed to shoot that scene was January 6th, 2021. They were scheduled to shoot that scene on January 7th, and on January 6th happened. So Adam McKay had to like call, they were shooting in Boston, he had to call the police and be like, hey, we've already cleared this, we already have permits for this, but we're shooting like a riot scene in downtown Boston today, and I just want you to know it's not that. It's not like a continuation of January 6th, it's just a scene we're shooting for a movie. Why am I talking about Don't Look Up? In the context of Superman and everything, like Superman says, look up. Adam McKay had a movie called Don't Look Up. Okay, where are we right now? It is Sunday, July 13th. And if you have been on your phone in the last 48 hours, you have seen that the Trump cult is having a full-blown come-to-Jesus mindfuck meltdown right now over the Epstein files. Over, it's finally the thing where, like, some members of the Trump cult seem to be seeing through the bullshit for the first time ever. Not all, but some seem to be getting it. I've been seeing videos of, like, people burning their MAGA hats, and it's because of the Epstein list and because of Trump's absolutely unhinged posts and commentary about the Epstein list. I don't know if you guys have seen the post that he wrote. I'm going to read it here. I'm going to pull it up. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's so long. You can pause and read it if you want. But like, I was on Threads before I saw this post, and I kept seeing all these people being like, what's going on with my theys? And in some cases, my thems. Or like, what's going on with my homies? And in some cases, my pals. And like, and I just was like, what is this joke that everyone's telling? And then I saw this post. And, you know, I mean, it's been 10 years of this guy, right? Like, it's hard for me to see him say something or write something that, like, catches me off guard or surprises me or makes me kind of, like, flummoxed in some way. But this one, I mean, this one line really did have me fully gagged and gooped and just so bewildered and confused when I read it. The post starts off with the sentence, what's going on with my boys and in some cases, gals? And if that weren't weird enough, the weirdest thing is he puts boys and gals in quotations. Why? I don't fucking know. Obviously, punctuation has been a thing with this guy the entirety of his political career. He always just randomly chooses to capitalize certain words. It doesn't seem like the words that he's capitalizing are necessarily helping to, like, emphasize that word. Like, if I were writing a post and I wanted to basically italicize a word to give it a certain punch, but there's not an option to italicize on Threads or X, I would write it in all caps so that it gives it that punch. But the way that Trump does all caps, it's more just sort of like, whenever I feel about it, whenever I just sort of feel like capitalizing, I'll just go all caps. And many, you know, many of his posts are just in all caps all the time. So, you know, spelling, grammar, it's never really been his strong suit. Obviously, this is the guy who gave us Covfefe, you know, but seeing what's going on with my boys, and in some cases, my gals, really fucked my brain in, like, it was kind of like an Argyle fucking, where I was like, this is so stupid and weird, my brain can't make sense of it. I still contend this too, that Argyle's such a bad movie that most people can't even, their brain can't even comprehend how bad it is, so they just kind of go, it probably isn't that bad, but that's how bad it is it's so bad it kind of defies all possible logic. And that's what this is. It's like, because I can't help but try to make sense of what he could have been trying to do by putting boys and gals in quotations, and it truly is just nothing. It just is nothing. It's just, he was just writing, and first of all, it's just completely unhinged for the president of the United States to start a post by going, what's going on with my boys, and in some cases, my gals? Because the substance of the post is him saying to his cult, you guys, what's going on? How come everybody's talking about the Epstein list? Come on, this is really hurting my feelings, you guys. Pam Bondi's doing such a good job, everybody. And you guys are talking about the Epstein. What is going on? We're supposed to be friends. You have my hat. You bought my Bible. You bought my gold sneakers. What's going on here? I thought that we were homies. I thought, like, why are you guys talking about Epstein all of a sudden? All of a sudden, as though this wasn't a thing that you fucking ran on. As though you didn't run on the promise to release the Epstein file. As though you haven't engendered in your cult the idea that they are somehow the anti-pedophile movement. As though, you know, conservatives don't... the one moral thing conservatives think about themselves is that they give a shit about pedophiles. It's something they think about themselves. It's not something they actually do in practice. But it's like the one moral thing that they can at least say to themselves and be like, well, we care about pedophiles. They obviously don't. But they'll go and watch movies like Sound of Freedom and be like, yeah, we're the party that cares about pedophiles. And then when you're like, what about Matt Gaetz? How come you don't care about Matt Gaetz? They're like, I mean, who wouldn't pay some money to somebody on Venmo to hook up with a 16-year-old? If you were Matt Gaetz, you would do it too, you know? But they at least in their brains like to self-soothe by being like, well, I might be racist and misogynistic and homophobic and xenophobic and just plain mean to people and just kind of ugly, and I love saying slurs, and I just kind of have a really hard time being kind in general, but at least I care about pedophiles. At least I went and saw Sound of Freedom 5 times in theaters because I in theory care about child sexual abuse, even though I ship my children off to church camp where there's an epidemic of youth pastors abusing children. At least I get to say that that's the one good thing I potentially care about. And the substance of this post from Trump is like, you guys, why is everybody talking about this? And to start it off with, what's going on with my boys, and in some cases, gals, is so crazy. What do you mean, in some cases, gals? Why is it in quotes? Oh my God. He also posted another one that was much shorter where he just said, stop talking about Epstein.
Don't talk about it.
I can't imagine a more blatant confession of guilt than these posts. She's like, everybody stop talking about the fact that I am definitely a child rapist. Everyone stop talking about that, please. It's very, very on the nose. It's very unsubtle. It's the kind of thing that would be really hard to satirize. It's the kind of thing that's really hard to heighten. But this is the thing that's finally getting some people in the MAGA cult to look up and come to terms with, you know, kind of like shake off the stupor of the brainwashing. But here's why I want to relate this to the movie Don't Look Up and to, you know, like the, like why I think it's crazy that people were criticizing Adam McKay and saying that his movie is unsubtle or too on the nose or whatever. Just like, yeah, we get it. Stop preaching at us. Is in the film, there's this moment. Okay, so the story of the film is Jennifer Lawrence, you know, spoilers for this movie if you haven't seen it, go watch it. It's great. It's on Netflix. Jennifer Lawrence discovers a comet. She and Leonardo DiCaprio, they do a calculation and they find out that the comet is on a direct collision course with Earth and that it's going to be an extinction level event. It's going to kill everybody. Immediately, they're flown to the White House and they basically go on like a, I think the timeline is like 9 months or something, maybe 6 or 9 months in the movie. And they go on this huge media blitz to try to inform people about this thing. But it's still something that people can't see in the sky with their own eyes or even with a telescope. Most people can't see it. So they have to take it on the word of these astronomers that this science is good and that it is true. Kind of the same way that climate change works. It's like a lot of people don't directly observe it with their naked eyes. I mean, they do if they're paying attention. Texas just had a flood where they had 26 foot high water surges in 45 minutes. I don't know about you, but that's a pretty wild thing to happen that doesn't seem very normal in a world that has a climate that is behaving normally. But, you know, if you're paying, you can watch videos of climate change actually happening. But for most people in their day-to-day life, you know, a senator walking into Congress and holding up a snowball and going, look, a snowball, climate change is fake. That's good enough for them. And that's how this movie operates for a lot of the runtime is most people are just like, you know, I think that they're making it up. I think that it's bullshit. But there's a moment in this film where they're at all of the followers of the president, who is Meryl Streep. It's if Trump was Meryl Streep, it's a woman Trump. And I mean, it's terribly unsubtle. Like, her kids work for her. She gives her son a cabinet position and her, you know, it's Jonah Hill is Trump Jr. It's all very on the nose. And they're at this rally. It's a Don't Look Up rally and everybody wears Don't Look Up pins and Don't Look Up hats. Again, very on the nose, where they've just been told, don't look into the sky because we don't need to be worried about the threat out there in the sky. And at this rally, one of her followers looks up in the sky and sees the comet for the first time. For the first time in the movie, the comet is visible to the naked eye in the sky. And now it's the moment where all of the rhetoric that's been getting passed around on social media, everyone saying, you know, these scientists are liars, or people saying they're not lying, but they're overblowing the possible effects of the comet. Maybe the comet will just glance off of us. There are a lot of different options of how we could deter the comet. It's a long way off. Don't actually, you know, we're going to figure this out. All of that chatter doesn't mean anything because now people can see it with their own eyes. And in Adam McKay's movie, where he's trying to do a somewhat heightened satire of reality, this is the turning point. This is when everyone goes, oh my God, they lied to us. They fucking lied to us. There it is. That's the fucking comet. Oh my God. And people at this rally take their hats off, their Don't Look Up hats. They throw them on the ground. They take their pins off. They throw them on the ground. Leonardo DiCaprio gets out of his car on the freeway. He's pointing up. Look, there it is. We tried to tell you. We tried to warn you. And there it is. In the movie, this is when humanity, for the most part, comes to terms with the reality of what's happening, and they start to try to reckon with the threat. They start to try to devise plans of how to, you know, now we're going to send rockets up and blow the comet up. Even the president of the United States says, okay, the comet is real. We're going to deal with it. We're going to figure this out. There are pretty much no deniers left at this point. Here's what's fucking crazy is our world already had the comet is visible moment. and we missed it. Like, we still have millions of people who are like, nah, I don't think that that's it. So I'm going to walk you through this because the Epstein list thing isn't actually the headline here. It's big. Like, it's important that the Epstein list is the thing that seems to be shaking off the days for some Trump cultists. But that's not the headline. Like, Trump being friends with Jeffrey Epstein and Trump being a sexual criminal is something we knew before he was ever president in 2017. Like, we've known this about Donald Trump. We've known that Donald Trump is friends with Jeffrey Epstein, has a history of being friends with him, has praised him in the past, has talked about how they both like to date young girls, not date, but assault young girls. And, you know, this is a thing that Trump has openly bragged about. This is something we already knew. It matters. It's important that the president of the United States is a sex criminal who's never been held to account. It's important that he was held liable for it in court, and then he was convicted, that, like, the conviction held up. That matters. But the main existential threat of the Trump administration and Trump's political reign always has been that America will become Germany in the 1930s and the 1940s. That's always been the actual existential threat, is that Trump could potentially end the world with nuclear fallout and that he could turn America into a full-blown totalitarian fascist state with death camps and mass exterminations of innocent dissidents. That's the headline. Like, that's the big thing. And since he first emerged on the scene, people have been saying, that guy's Hitler. That guy's going to turn America into a Nazi state. And those people have been called alarmists. They've been told they have Trump derangement syndrome. They've been dismissed. Even people who agree with them have said, yeah, we get it, but, like, calm down. It's so annoying. Enough with the preaching. I want to walk you through this kind of, like, timeline, because I did another episode of this podcast where I did a whole timeline of Trump being a Nazi and doing Nazi things and escalating his Nazi rhetoric. So you can watch that episode too. And that has a whole kind of a longer breakdown. I'll try to make this one a little bit more truncated, but I do need to go back through it because it helps me make my case here. So we're going to kind of, you know, relate this timeline to the timeline that Adam McKay lays out in Don't Look Up. So, you know, Adam McKay's allegory, metaphor is about climate change. I want to make the movie Don't Look Up about the existential threat posed by the Trump political era and Nazism and, you know, all of that. When Trump first shows up on the scene right away, he is doing ultra-nationalist, America First, you know, othering of immigrants. You know, Mexicans are rapists and criminals, and we need to keep them out. We need to do a Muslim ban, villainizing queer people. Queer people are groomers, and we need to get trans people out of the military. And, you know, and all of that escalates, right, throughout his career. I want to make an official decree that there are only two genders, and just everything that he can do to increasingly marginalize already marginalized communities and to strengthen this notion of us versus them and the other. And all of this is incredible. I mean, it's not just, like, eerily reminiscent of Hitler. It's just beat for beat the Hitler book. From the word go, there are people pointing at what Trump is saying and doing and saying, that's Hitler shit. That's Nazi shit. This is the moment in the film when Jennifer Lawrence first discovers the comet. She sees the comet with a high-powered telescope, and she and Leonardo DiCaprio do the calculations, and within 24 hours, they are on the news telling the world about what they're seeing. This was happening from the jump with Trump. There were people on the news reading speeches from Hitler and saying, this guy is basically saying word for word this exact same thing. So that's that, you know, that's where we're at from that point. Then he starts to escalate and he starts to get a little more comfortable, especially after he starts to win primaries and he starts to win support and he starts to get a little more brazen. And there's this moment in Don't Look Up where Meryl Streep, who's the female Trump, talks about how at one point in her campaign, she got caught by the paparazzi smoking cigarettes, and they thought it was going to undo her campaign. And then she goes, and what happened? I went up in the polls. They loved that I smoked cigarettes. They felt like they liked that I just don't give a shit and that I'm kind of hardcore like that. And that's Trump, you know, realizing that the fans love his rhetoric. They want him to ramp it up. They want him to be more cruel. They want him to be more overt with the racism, more overt with the allusions to Nazi Germany, and that it's actually good for his polling. And so he starts to mirror the words of Hitler's speeches even closer, and so close that people are, you know, again, going on the news and saying, this is basically the 14 words that Hitler spoke. Like, these are like he's taking passages from Mein Kampf. He's taking passages from famous speeches and just repeating it either in Truth Social posts or behind a pulpit. And this reminds me of a part in the movie where Leonardo DiCaprio and Jennifer Lawrence are in a meeting in the White House with Jonah Hill and Meryl Streep, and they tell them that there's 99% certainty that this comet will hit the Earth and will destroy it. And what Meryl Streep and Jonah Hill say is they go, oh, 99%. There you go. So it's not 100%. It's not a lock. And they go, no. It is a lock. Like, it is, it's basically 100%. And they go, but it's not. It's 99%. So we can call it, we could say there's a 90% chance. And he goes, no, you can't say there's a 90% chance. It's 99%. And that's what was happening when people were pointing out the similarities of Trump's rhetoric and Trump's plans to Hitler's, as they were going, this is like 99% word for word, like almost an exact transcript. And pundits would go, yeah, but it's not an exact word for word transcript. It's just 99%. So it's not the exact same. Stop being such an alarmist. Get out, you with your Trump derangement syndrome, your TDS. We repudiate Trumpism in 2021. Thank God. Fire the guy. We have, obviously what happens on January 6th, and we have 4 years of propaganda and election denial and him fomenting and, inserting massive doubt into the electoral system and basically just announcing to the American people, I'm a fucking cheater who cheats at everything. And if I ever win another election, you can probably rest assured that it's because I'm going to find a way to cheat, because that's what I do. Everyone's trying to point that out, even during the Biden era, of like, this guy's going to run again and he's probably going to cheat and make sure that he wins. He's announcing it. He's doing things like replacing Republican lawmakers in states that did not ratify the election in his favor against Joe Biden and replacing them with people who will do his bidding and who will be bootlickers. They're making things like Project 2025. During all of this, I feel like Jennifer Lawrence, who she's going on TV and she's screaming, oh my God, what do we need to do to get you people to recognize what's happening here? And the news is laughing at her and being like, this girl's crazy. People make her into a meme about how crazy she is for being an alarmist about this comet. And every time I was calling Trump a Nazi and saying that he's doing Nazi things, I had people in my family, I had close friends checking in on me and going, dude, are you okay? You seem unwell. You seem like, I mean, you're really going down a rabbit hole here. And I think, like, you got to take it easy with some of this rhetoric, people telling me to calm down. Trump gets reelected. Who knows if it's a legitimate victory? I think winning all seven swing states is highly suspect for a person who announces how much he likes cheating as much as Donald Trump does and announces how much he believes in cheating as much as Donald Trump does. I think it's highly suspect that there are entire counties in New York that went 100% for Donald Trump. I think that's suspect for that to happen in kind of any state. Our moment where the comet is visible in the sky, it's the moment that I just can't get past. This entire year, it's just been the moment that is seared into my brain. I just cannot emotionally, physically, psychologically get past it. At the inauguration for Donald Trump, Elon Musk, who bought the election for him and who probably aided in the stealing of the election for him, stands on stage in front of a crowd, in front of an international audience with cameras on him, everybody in the world watching, and does a full, emphatic, unapologetic Sieg Heil on the stage saying, yes, we are Nazis. That's right. You just elected the Nazis. That's right. You just helped me get Hitler into the White House. And then later that week, he goes to a Nazi rally in Germany and says, I don't think you guys should be ashamed of being Nazis. I think you should be proud of it. This is the moment where the comet is now visible in the sky. All of the online speculation, none of it matters anymore. All of the comparison of the words, how he called immigrants vermin who are poisoning the blood of the country, everyone pointing out how Hitlerian that is, and people having arguments over what he actually meant, none of it matters anymore. Because at this point in the story, we can now see the comet. There's no arguing about it. There it is. Look up. There it the fuck is. He just did a fucking Nazi salute on stage, and you cannot say he didn't. And what happens in our reality, what happens in actual reality, in the actual movie is, they look up in the sky, see the comet, and they go, no, I don't think that's what that is. I think that's something else. I refuse to believe that that's what that is. Absolutely not. And what ensues is 6 months of escalation. You know, they go, you know, it starts with, we're going to come and we're going to, you know, grab undocumented people off the streets. ISIS, almost immediately, we start having people being arrested by gangs of men who are in plain clothes and in unmarked cars, grabbing people off the street. They're wearing masks and throwing people into cars with no due process. And immediately people are going, this is a constitutional crisis. This is constitutionally illegal. Documented or undocumented, you are owed your day in court in this country. That is what the law of the country says. And this administration almost immediately says, fuck that. We're here. We're doing Nazi shit. And every day, every week, the comet gets closer and closer and closer and more defined. It gets more, you can see it clearer and clearer and clearer. People are still looking down and going, I'm not going to look up because it's just undocumented. He's just putting criminals in there. It's just people who broke the law. If they didn't want to get deported, you know, they shouldn't have broken the law. If they didn't want to get ripped away from their families, they shouldn't have broken the law. Studies come out showing how the overwhelming majority of people detained by ICE have no criminal record and have not committed any crimes. Being undocumented is a misdemeanor. Most of these people are guilty of a misdemeanor, and most of these people were involved in the process of legitimizing their citizenship through immigration courts. A lot of these people get arrested at immigration court while they are going through the process of trying to adhere to the law. And these people keep looking down and just going, no, I'm not going to acknowledge that there's a comet in the sky. I refuse. And when Trump first started, I don't think people even remember at this point that he first floated the idea of what if we started shipping them to torture facilities in El Salvador. And people initially went, he can't do that. And judges said, he can't do that. That's constitutionally illegal. You can't just ship people that you've detained in America off to a foreign torture facility with no due process. And even his followers said, he's not going to do that. They kept looking down and said, he doesn't have the power to do that. Oh my God, liberals are so gullible. You guys just believe anything that he says off the cuff. Then he immediately started doing that. And we're all going, oh my God, the comet's getting closer. The comet's getting closer. Then he starts doing offhand remarks about how he wants to do homegrowns next. He wants to start shipping homegrowns, which means natural-born citizens, off to foreign torture facilities next. And we go, you guys, what more do you need to see? Like, the comet has been visible in the sky now for months and months, and he is talking about coming after you next. And they go, ah, no. I mean, he's exaggerating. He's trolling. Don't be so gullible. They just keep looking down at the ground and wearing their don't look up pin. They just keep committing to the bit and just refusing to acknowledge what is happening. And now, in the midst of all of this Epstein stuff, you know, saying there is no Epstein file, actually, don't worry about it. There's no Epstein client list. Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell went to prison for no reason. They definitely didn't have any clients that they flew out to their private pedophile island. Don't ask any more questions about it, even though Don Jr. used to tweet things like, never stop asking questions about this. Never stop asking yourself this question. Always keep asking why they would hide a list like this, even though they ran on the promise that they would expose stuff like this. They're now saying, don't worry about it. But in the midst of all of this, Donald Trump tweets out that he's thinking about revoking the citizenship of Rosie O'Donnell. And a lot of people on the left and right called this something that we don't really need to worry about. I saw this and I went, you guys, this is important. This is because people were kind of going like, oh, what a whack job. Like, he thinks he can take away. I saw people, so many left-leaning people going, he doesn't have the power to do that. What an idiot. Golly, he's so crazy. And I was like, you guys, he didn't have the power to ship people off to foreign torture facilities without due process. Federal judges told him that. The Constitution tells him that. He doesn't care. That's the point. He keeps saying he's going to do things that are constitutionally illegal, and then he keeps doing them. This is not an empty threat. This is a public announcement that this is the next step in the escalation to being a full-blown Nazi state, that this is indeed happening. The comet is in the sky. You can now take out a pair of cheap binoculars and see the definition of the comet. You can see its trajectory with your own eyes and see that it's on a direct collision course for Earth. And still we have people on the left and right going, oh, it's just a distraction. It's a distraction. We should really focus on the Epstein list. This whole taking away Rosie O'Donnell's citizenship thing, that's just a distraction. No, the fuck it is not. A distraction would be, you know, Fox News bringing up a story of like some trans athlete, you know, taking sixth place in a fencing competition somewhere so that they can distract from the Epstein list and distract from all the Nazi shit. That's a distraction. A distraction would be Trump throwing a member of his team under the bus, you know, so that we can focus on for some like minor gaffe that that person committed. So we can focus on that drama instead of focusing on the Epstein list and all of the Nazi shit. The Nazi shit is not a distraction from the Epstein list. The Nazi shit is the main headline. That is the thing. That is the comet. The Nazi stuff is the comet. Epstein is not the comet. Epstein is just Trump being a shitty guy. Epstein is just more evidence of what a dirtbag Donald Trump always has been. What a gross criminal Donald Trump always has been. The Nazi stuff is the main existential threat he poses, not only to the country that he governs over, but to the entire world. You cannot simply dismiss him publicly announcing plans to start revoking citizenships from natural-born citizens so that he can willy-nilly start shipping off innocent dissidents to torture camps and death camps. You can't just shirk that off. I skipped a step, too. There was one step in there, you know, before all this happened where people went, oh, they're not Nazis. If they're Nazis, where are the concentration camps? And we pointed to the torture facilities in El Salvador, and they were like, yeah, but those are in El Salvador. And we were like, yeah, Auschwitz was in Poland. It wasn't in Germany. You know, often concentration camps are in another country. It's so that they can get around the laws of the country that they're in. And they were like, yeah, but there's not any concentration camps here. Then he builds Alligator Alcatraz, and these fucking don't look uppers go and buy concentration camp merch. They buy shirts of Alligator Alcatraz and hats, and they go and stand outside the sign of Alligator Alcatraz in Florida and go, yay, concentration camps. And then, you know, we go, okay, there's the concentration camps. And they go, oh no, they have air conditioning and they have food and they get showers and stuff. And then reports start coming out of Alligator Alcatraz. And it's like, of course, that's not the case. People are saying that there's maggots in their food, that they're all having to shit and piss into the same containers that they have to brush their teeth in and get their drinking water out of. Like, obviously, that's the case. And again, we tried to tell these people, like, Germany told their citizens that the concentration camps were humane and that the conditions were good. People had to be shown videos of what was happening in them after the war was over for them to understand what had happened. My point is, our actual reality is so much more monumentally fucked than the world of Don't Look Up. And a lot of people didn't like the movie Don't Look Up because they thought it was a little, like, too alarmist or too on the nose. And it wasn't on the nose enough. And the only thing that seems to be getting some of the MAGA cult and people on the left as well to like get involved is this Epstein thing. And listen, it's a worthy cause. It's a worthwhile thing to not shut up about. And I think we should take Don Jr.'s advice and not shut up about it. Donald Trump Jr. said, never stop asking questions about why they won't release the Epstein list. He wrote that in 2023. And I think that we should take the advice of Donald Trump Jr. and never stop fucking talking about it. I think it is absolutely a worthwhile thing to focus on. But it's crazy that this is the thing that's finally getting people to look up. And not all of the blatant fucking Nazi shit that's been going on. Not all of the, just the blatant march right into the open mouth of a giant monster that is Nazis coming back and taking over America, putting innocent people in death camps. It's already taking place. It's already happening. And he keeps publicly announcing plans to escalate it. So this brings me back to Superman. Because as I said at the beginning of this episode, in order for this movie to work for you, the reason why it didn't work for my brothers and my dad is you have to buy in. You have to buy into the fact that, like, this is a property that is based on cartoons and comic books. And the characters in this movie, it's not stylistically incorrect for them to feel like cartoon characters or for them to feel like comic book characters. They should feel that way. And in order for the movie to work for you emotionally, you're gonna have to buy in. So I know I'm right in the middle of doing my whole wrap-up conclusion to the episode, but I gotta jump in here really quick and say something, because I've talked now in several different videos about how my brother and my dad walked out of Superman, and I've had so many people in my comments be like, oh, are they MAGA? They must be MAGA. They must, your dad and brother must be MAGA. Sorry about that. They must be huge Trump supporters. Or people will just be like, I guess your brother and dad are just shitty people. I guess they just suck. I guess they're just terrible. And I just want to say really quick, no, my brother and dad are two of the best people I've ever met in my life. They're two of the kindest, most generous, most charitable people I've ever met. So no, that's not what's going on there. And I have tried to talk to them about what it was that just didn't work for them about the film. And I just want to like jump in here and clear something up, because as far as I see it, there are two groups of people primarily who Superman doesn't work for as a character, and specifically James Gunn's Superman. The first group is conservatives, for sure, like MAGA people, and MAGA people specifically don't like this version of Superman for the simple, stupid reason that he's just a nice guy who does nice things. He's just a good person who cares about people and tries to like serve marginalized communities and take care of people. That's it. Like, the movie genuinely isn't woke. It's got a bunch of white people, straight white people, as its leads. The only quote-unquote woke thing about the movie is just that Superman is an immigrant who's nice. That's it. And MAGA is so just ideologically absolutely buried and steeped in hatred and mean-spirited nonsense that they just can't stand a movie where the protagonist is just nice and the antagonist is just like them. He's just mean and sad. So that's the first group of people who Superman doesn't work for, and that's not who my brother and father is. The second group of people who have a really hard time with Superman are cynics. And I don't say the word cynics as a pejorative or an insult. I'm not saying that as a bad thing. My dad, first of all, isn't really much of a cynic. My dad is actually kind of an optimistic softy. My dad just doesn't like superhero movies. That's kind of the third group of people who this doesn't work for, is just like people who in general just don't like modern superhero movies. I don't think my dad has enjoyed a modern superhero or action film in like 30 years. I just think he's from a certain generation where when lots of overwrought CGI piles up on the screen, he kind of glazes over and goes, this is cartoon nonsense, and I don't relate to anything that's happening here, and I don't like this. And that's totally valid. But, you know, in the group of cynics, I think my brother more aligns with this group. And again, I don't say this as a pejorative. I think that cynicism is a deeply relatable and valid emotion and, you know, kind of position to have. I think it's a realistic position. I think that we live in a world that lends itself quite easily to cynicism. And I do think that there are a lot of superhero stories that lean into cynicism, that try to lean into the world as it feels for a lot of us, where these are characters, you know, characters like Batman and characters like even a lot of the stories in the MCU, you know, the way that the Avengers fail in Avengers Infinity War and the way that they have to deal with 5 years of like failing half the universe, that half the universe dies. Stories that feel like they have real consequences, where the cruelty and the evil sometimes wins, where the hero has to deal with the fact that they can't save everybody, where the hero has to be confronted with the collateral damage of their superheroing antics, I think is relatable to a lot more people. I had a guy on my YouTube channel, or not YouTube, sorry. I had a guy on my TikTok channel say to me that he just relates to Frank Castle more, the Punisher. He just said he has a lot easier time relating to Frank Castle than he does to Clark Kent. And I was like, I can't fault you for that. I get that. That makes sense. That like Frank Castle is this character who his entire family was murdered, and he basically just spends the rest of his life with this insatiable bloodlust for vengeance. And he just sees the world as like an inherently violent and unfair place. And, you know, through the lens of a hero, he's determined to make the world a little bit more fair by punishing the cruel and violent people in the world and, you know, visiting their violence upon them tenfold. And that's Frank Castle's whole thing. And there's a lot of people who are like, I relate to that more. And I get that. I think that is a valid perspective. And I think that it's a perspective that is in many ways more reflective of reality. I think what happens with Superman for a lot of people who are more inclined toward that kind of vision is they see this guy who he's just like, he's got this arrogant smirk on his face and this stupid little curl in his hair and this bright primary colored goofy outfit that looks like pajamas, and his name is so on the nose, Superman, and he's flying around and just being effortlessly strong and effortlessly good and effortlessly aspirational. He doesn't seem to like have to deal with any of the consequences that other characters have to deal with. He's causing tens of millions of damage, of dollars in damage to the city every time he goes out and fights one of these kaijus or fights another metahuman. And everyone's just sort of sitting there, sipping their coffee, watching him like nothing matters. And so to my brother, when he watches a Superman story, and to people like my brother who are not conservative, who are not MAGA, when they watch Superman, what they see is a character that doesn't reflect reality, a character that's just sort of effortlessly good. He's just, and everyone loves him, even though what he's doing should horrify people. The fact that he's just throwing people through buildings and leveling cities and causing craters in the ground and things like that. People should be more conflicted about their feelings about this character than they are. But the world of Metropolis just sort of seems to look at him and smile and be like, that's our Superman. We sure do love him. And from a cynical outlook, which again, I think this is an understandable and reasonable outlook, but it is cynical. What people like that are seeing, they're kind of seeing Superman the way that Lex Luthor sees him. They're looking at it and going, what is everyone fucking cheering for? He just caused tens of millions of dollars in property damage. Yeah, maybe he minimized civilian casualties, but what the fuck? We're all supposed to be happy about this? That this superpowered alien has brought all of this cataclysmic turmoil to us, and we're all supposed to just be like, yay, go Superman, and fly Superman flags and wear Superman pins? No, fuck that. I want Superman to be a little bit more accountable and a little bit more human. Lex Luthor sees Superman smirking, and it's like, what the fuck are you smirking about? What are you so arrogantly proud of? You know, and Lex Luthor sees himself as a pragmatist and the person who actually everyone should be looking to solve their problems, because he might not be as nice as Superman. He might not be, he might not strive to be as good as Superman, but he still wants to be the guy at the end of the day who can solve people's problems. He's terribly ill-fitted for that position, but he wants to be that guy. And what makes him ill-fitted for that position is how mean-spirited and just downright kind of sad and insecure and bigoted he is. But I don't think that the people who are cynics who struggle with Superman have all of Lex's qualities. I think that good people with good hearts who believe in kindness and who believe in trying to do your best to be a good person still struggle with Superman because they're not seeing the totality of what's going on. When they see Superman fighting a kaiju in downtown Metropolis and everyone's kind of watching while smiling and drinking coffee, they see, oh, none of this matters. There's no stakes here. People should be fleeing for their lives and running scared. The reality of the world Superman occupies is the citizens of Metropolis know who Superman is and they know how he fights and they've come to trust him. They believe that he's capable of saving the day without anyone getting hurt. Like that he will go out of his way to save every pedestrian, every dog on the street. There's a scene in this movie, again, I don't want to give away too much, but he saves a fucking squirrel. He scoops a squirrel up off the ground. And a lot of people watch that and they go, that's cringe. That's corny. How stupid. But it's like, that's who Superman is. Superman is a person that makes people go, he's so good. It's corny. It's like, it's pathetic how good he tries to be. But that's the point. The reason why the citizens of Metropolis can sip their coffee and watch as Superman fights another metahuman in the sky is they know he's got it. He's going to take care of it and they feel safe with him around. That's why they wear the pins. That's why they fly the flags. But that doesn't mean that the character of Superman doesn't have conflict, because Clark Kent is the way he is. He is the beacon of hope that he is because of the choices he makes, that he makes choices every single day to try to be the very best person he possibly can be and to use all of his immense power to just help people and to help people feel a little bit more hopeful. His struggle is knowing that if he ever were to take his eye off the ball of, you know, morality and his values, that he could really easily slip into being a really bad person who could cause a lot of harm. And I mean, like, that's like Batman's problem with Superman, is Batman is always afraid that Superman's going to slip, and that if Superman takes his eye off the ball of being a good person, he could destroy the entire world. Because the whole thing of Batman and Superman, the way that they mirror each other, is Batman feels in his heart of hearts that if he had as much raw power as Superman has, he wouldn't be able to be a good person. He wouldn't be able to trust himself. He looks at Superman, and most of all, he's like, there's no way any person with that much power can be trusted. And that's simultaneously why he admires Superman so much, and also why he is skeptical of him. And likewise, Superman looks at Batman and goes, there's absolutely no way, if I was just a regular guy with no superpowers, I could do what he does. It's crazy that Bruce steps up here and fights with me next to me. And he's just a guy. He's just a guy in a suit with some fancy tools. And that's the Clark Kent side of him, of just like, he just is kind of like, aw shucks, Bruce Wayne really, really impresses me with what he's able to do. And that's sort of like what makes the story special, but that's what makes it hard for cynics, because at the end of the day, it's just kind of a feel-good story about this corn-fed farm boy from Kansas who's just doing his best in the big city to like help people out and be nice. And there's not a whole lot of the darkness that seeps in. It tries to get in, but Clark's so good at refuting it that it kind of has nowhere to fit in the Superman universe. And I think for a lot of people, like, that's an aesthetic that upsets them, because in our real world, where we do have characters like Lex Luthor, where we do have angry, insecure, loser billionaires who just can't, like, buy themselves an ounce of happiness and just make their insecurity and their sadness everybody else's problem, where those people do exist, we don't really have the Supermans. We have human beings who try their best to emulate what Clark Kent would try to do, but we don't have any metahumans who are going to come around and just save the day every time perfectly with no collateral damage. So I think for understandably cynical people, they look at a Superman movie or a Superman comic and they just go like, no way. That there's nothing here that I can relate to. If there is going to be a superhero, I want him to have way more flaws than that. I want him to be more like me. I want him to be someone who's trying his best to be good, but who fucks up way more often. And Clark Kent does fuck up. He does make mistakes. But the thing about Superman is that he's the aspiration of all that we could be. And I think, you know, in order for Superman to work for you as a character, you sort of just have to make the choice to believe in him. You have to make the choice to buy in. You have to make the choice to open yourself to what James Gunn is offering you in the movie Superman. And I'm so happy that I kind of made the choice before the movie even started that I was going to be open to it because I love this character and I was so excited to see him on the big screen again. And I can't wait to go watch the movie again. I honestly think that after I watch it a few more times, this might be my favorite Superman movie I've ever seen. I'm actually going that far. But Superman is a story at its core about how being good and being kind is a choice. It's an active thing that you have to choose day after day. And you have to choose to believe in the character Superman. Like, people in the world that Superman exists in have to choose to believe that he has their best interests at heart, because this is a character who has so much power that if he wanted, he could just rule over Earth as like a merciless titan, and he could just be a dictator and enslave the entire human population. Clark Kent, the human, you know, behind the cape, decides every single day that he's going to put effort into being the best person he can possibly be, the most compassionate person, the kindest person. And it's simultaneously his greatest strength and his greatest vulnerability. I don't want to say the word weakness, because it's not weakness that Clark chooses to be good, but it is his vulnerability. It's what makes him vulnerable to the evil of people like Lex Luthor. What we see with Lex and with Superman, and you see this so well in James Gunn's movie, is two of the most powerful beings on Earth. Lex is a human whose power is extracted from money and intelligence. That he's a highly intelligent, highly capable human who has kind of an unlimited supply of money and an unlimited, you know, like army of people who can work for him and sort of build these mechanisms of growing his personal brand and personal wealth. The way Lex wields his immense power is the way that most billionaires and powerful people in our world wield their power. He wields it like a selfish, insecure, fucking asshole. Like, he just hates everyone that's different from him. He has all the money in the world and he can't fucking be happy. He can't just fucking chill. He's got to just be pissed off that there's some guy who's not from the place that he's from who's getting more attention than him. And that pisses him off, so he makes his whole life about othering these people, you know, that come from other places and making sure that people like him more than they like Superman. Superman could be just as petty, just as insecure, just as blinded by his power, but he makes the choice to put so much effort into trying to be a good person. Lois Lane and Pa and Ma Kent are his moral compass. That is where that's what grounds him in humanity. That's where his morality comes from. There's a lot of great scene work in this movie, again, no spoilers, where we see Lois Lane giving Superman his moral direction and making sure she keeps him in check. And we see where, like, his pure heart comes from when he visits his parents. But Superman's goodness, the thing that makes Superman special as a character, the thing that always has made him special, is that his goodness is a choice. He chooses to be... Sorry, everybody. I weirdly just got really emotional. He chooses to be a good person, the best person he possibly can be. He knows that he's going to make mistakes. He knows that he's going to wield his power in ways that are maybe irresponsible from time to time. He's trying his best not to, but that's his whole thing, is that he's putting real effort into trying to be nice, trying to be good, trying to care about people who are forgotten and marginalized and demonized and dehumanized. And that takes effort. And it takes the same effort for us. We have to choose. We have to choose to believe that a character like Superman could exist, someone with that much power who can still do good. We have to choose to open ourselves to that. We have to choose to look up. That's it for my spiel. That is my sermon. Let's see what the TikTok Digital Studio audience thinks. You guys have had a lively discussion here in the comments. How are you feeling? I got emotional there. I care a lot about this character, and also what a crazy time we're living in, right? And how punk rock and how badass of James Gunn to be like, look up, motherfuckers, look up. I think a big problem that we have in our current society is that paying attention to it, looking up, looking at what's happening, looking at Superman fighting a giant monster in the sky, as scary as that is, it should be scary. But the fact that there are people who are willing to stand up and fight back should also be inspiring. The fact that there are Nazis taking over the country should be physically and emotionally and psychologically uncomfortable for you. You should feel some amount of physical and psychological and emotional discomfort on a daily basis right now. You should. I'm sorry. Like, when I get people who constantly reach out to me and go like, are you okay? Are you taking care of yourself? Are you taking care of your mental health? And I'm like, listen, I'm doing the best that I can. I'm doing the best that I can to stay sane and to protect as much of my peace as I can, to stay inspired and happy. And I keep making art and I keep doing things that I care about. And I keep spending time with the people who matter most to me. And I keep trying to be a kind person. But the amount of psychological and emotional distress I feel on a day-to-day basis, I think is appropriate. And I think more people need to allow themselves to feel it, because I think it's appropriate. You should be feeling that way. It should make you uncomfortable. And you should also be looking for the helpers. Do like Mr. Rogers says and look for the helpers and get inspired. Look up. Gen X Pop says, my anxiety is through the roof. I'm doing what I can to laugh and enjoy my friends and family. And that's important too. Obviously, it's important to find the space for like what's inspiring you. I mean, that's why I'm like, go see the Superman movie. Go see it twice. Go buy a ticket for the MAGA person who's not going to go buy it because they don't want to watch a movie where a good character does good things. What a crazy concept. You know, find something to be inspired by. Keep your eyes on the comet in the sky, because we have a job to do as well. Tanya says, yes, we are being tortured psychologically. I try to find joy in my garden and loved ones. And that is kind of the point of Steve Bannon talks about this, the flooding the zone. Torturing you psychologically, overwhelming you psychologically is the point. It's the strategy. The strategy is to get you to shut down. So that's what happened again with like, Don't Look Up. When Adam McKay makes this movie where he's like, what the fuck, everybody? Why does nobody care about climate change? A lot of people were just so tired of the psychological weight of caring about climate change and watching the people who have the power to do something about it not do anything, that this movie just kind of felt like one more thing that's psychologically beating them up. And I get that, and I'm sympathetic to that, and I even get how this podcast, this conversation that I just had, could be one more thing that's just psychologically pounding you into the ground. But this is a time for resilience. Looking up requires bravery. Like, standing in the street in Metropolis and looking up and watching Superman go to work and defend the city and not leaving, and like, it requires a level of bravery. We live in a world with nuclear proliferation and nuclear weapons, and we live in a world with fucking Nazis in the government. It obviously causes a lot of distress, but it requires us to be psychologically and emotionally resilient. We need to continue to keep our eyes on what matters and on what's important. Lord Gregor Lives says, Luthor, his government connections, and the Boravia conflict was definitely intentional allegory. Yeah, there, again, nothing subtle about it, in my opinion. I don't think that James Gunn cares that it's unsubtle commentary or allegory. I think he's totally fine to be as on the nose as he is. There's so many things that I could say that are spoilers that I don't want to say. Again, you can watch my full review of the movie over on my other podcast, The Oneer, with Austin and Kramer, The Oneer podcast. That's on YouTube, Spotify. Calf WD asks, who is going to save us, or how do we fight it seriously? It's a very good question, and my honest answer is I don't know. That answer is part of why I feel daily distress and discomfort, because I don't see other world powers rising up to meet this existential threat the same way that they rose up to meet the existential threat of Hitler and the Axis powers in the 1930s and 1940s. And I wonder when some country's going to grow the balls to like start annexing the US and saying your tariff policies we don't agree with, the way that you're treating your citizens, you know, you're in violation of international law. I don't know what it takes for some kind of international actors to grow the backbone to move on America. It's sort of a problem to be a country that has the most well-funded and powerful military force in the world. My thing that I do is I'm a yapper. That's what my hat says. That's been my job full time for the last 5 years. And as a person with a platform, it's a modest platform, but it's a platform. It's my job to just not shut up about it. When the Trump cult tells me that I have TDS, when they tell me that I'm gullible, that I'm overreacting, when people in my own camp tell me that I'm an alarmist, tell me to give it a rest, tell me to stop with all the fear mongering. It's my job to not listen to them and to keep pushing forward and to keep sounding the alarm, to keep making sure I call it what it is. I will never back down from how serious of a moment Elon Musk doing that salute was. At that moment, there was no more. At that point, it's like, you can't debate this anymore. They are Nazis. And we have people who are looking at them doing the Nazi salute and going, nah, nah. I don't think so. We move on from things way too easily. The fact that it's so hard for us to talk about Melissa Hortman and her husband and her dog being executed by a right-wing terrorist, that we just we can't keep that in the news cycle. We can't keep talking about the fact that just very, very recently, just days ago, a man impersonating a police officer went and murdered a Democratic lawmaker. Kath WD says, where are the Democrats in all caps? Yeah, boy, the Democrats make it really hard for me to do my job as we head into another midterm year. My job as an online sociopolitical commentator and advocate is to deprive right-wing extremism of viability. I need them to lose elections so that being a right-wing extremist, being a full-blown Nazi, no longer is seen as a viable political position for right-wingers, which means I need Democrats to win elections in the short term. I just need Republicans to lose, and the third-party option is not strong enough yet to beat them, and so I need Democrats to win so that far-right extremism is starved of its viability as a viable position. And boy, Democrats make my job hard to do. When Democrats back off of impeaching Donald Trump, they make my job hard to do. When some of the I will say this about the Democrats. Not a goddamn one of them voted for the big, terrible bill. There's definitely some things that some Democrats are trying to step up and do with the limited power that they currently have. And I'm definitely paying attention to who those people are. You know, Mr. Rogers, look for the helpers. And I'm trying to put a lot of faith in them. I definitely am putting a lot of faith into Zoran Mamdani and his campaign and what that means and hopefully what that signals to the larger powers that be. Obviously, the Democratic establishment does not want us liking Zoran Mamdani because it means that they have to change tack and follow more of his model. But what I'm hoping is Zoran Mamdani signifies that the new generation, younger folks under 70 years old, really, let's be honest, it's folks under 60, are excited about electing people like Zoran Mamdani, and it means that hopefully we can get increasingly more progressive candidates like that. But job number one for us as voters is to make sure that we don't let these fuckers win elections. Period. You cannot let Nazis win elections. And that means that sometimes you gotta fucking swallow your medicine and vote for somebody that you're not fully aligned with so that you can stop a fucking Nazi from winning an election. Anima says, as someone who is begging for Dems to get it and move left, what if Mamdani doesn't win? People seem to assume he will. Premature? Obviously, there's a possibility that Mamdani doesn't win. I think it's very slim, personally. Obviously, I was very confident that Kamala Harris had the 2024 victory in the bag. I had not seen the Democratic voter base that energized since Obama, and I got swept up in it. And also, as time goes on, I'm not entirely convinced that she didn't win. And people hate fucking talking about that. People on the left hate talking about it because they're like, oh, it makes us sound like them. But what drives me nuts about that is I'm like, don't you realize that they poisoned the well of that discourse for us? The reason why they spent 4 years saying that Joe Biden stole the election is so that they could poison the well of election denial discourse, so that when they cheated and when they stole an election, if we said the same thing, they'd go, oh, well, now you just sound like us. Or other people in our ranks would be like, oh, well, now you just sound like them. The difference is we audited the 2020 election. It was heavily audited. It was audited by the Republicans. Republican hired companies combed through all of the evidence and found no foul play, found no evidence that there was any tampering. It's one of the most secure and well-researched elections in the history of America. 60 courts repudiated baseless lawsuits over that election denial claim. We haven't even begun to unpack the 2024 election. And the little bit that has come out is so fucking fishy. And also, it's just sort of like, without even having to look at evidence, it's just like, is Donald Trump the kind of person who would cheat to win an election? And the answer is unequivocally yes. 100%. But going back to Mamdani, is it a lock that Mamdani's going to win in New York? Of course not. No election is a lock, but I feel pretty fucking confident. I feel like the Democratic establishment doesn't want him to win. The liberal press doesn't want him to win, but the voters do. And the voters are the ones who get to make the call at the end of the day. And I think the voters are going to make the right call. What Superman is about, it's about hope. They live in a world that is existentially beset by all kinds of horrors. Like there are all kinds of horrors that are threatening their reality, and Superman exists as this glimmer of hope, and you have to choose to believe in him. Because you could be a cynic in that world and be like, Superman can't be everywhere at once. As powerful as he is, he's not powerful enough to like always protect us from every, and you know, we can't even fully trust him. Or you can choose to be a person who believes that Superman's going to do the right thing at the end of the day. And sometimes you got to look at a Zoran Mamdani, you got to look at an AOC, you got to look at a Jasmine Crockett and say, I'm choosing to believe you. I'm choosing to believe that you have the power to give us a different future. CFD says, do you think the Trump admin will go after him like they're saying? I wouldn't put it past them. I would not put anything past this administration. Anytime this administration threatens to do something, we should believe them. That's my rule of thumb when it comes to the Trump administration. When they say they want to do something, even if it's fully constitutionally illegal, even if they have no power to do that thing in a legal basis, we should take them seriously. How many times do you need to see him do something that he quote unquote doesn't have the power to do before you get smart? So anytime they talk about something they want to do, as crazy and as unhinged and as hypothetically illegal as it may be, we should take them seriously. Like the Weather just asked, am I crazy to be terrified that they are coming after us with those $45 billion? And what they're referring to is the $45 billion budget that ICE now has. And no, you are not crazy at all to be terrified of that. That is the game plan. And again, that's not a secret. That's out in the open. That was the whole theme of this podcast, was like this announcement of I'm thinking about revoking the citizenship of Rosie O'Donnell. You know, he started by saying, well, after we get all of the undocumented, all of the illegals, I'd like to do homegrowns next. I'd like to start shipping citizens off to detention facilities, concentration camps, death camps, torture camps. And now he's just outright posting about specific people whose citizenship he would like to revoke so that he can send them to torture facilities. And part of boosting their budget is so that he has the ability to act at will. He has the ability to wage war on the American people, to wage war on the judiciary. And by the way, this whole coordinated propaganda campaign against the judiciary, again, Hitler. That's the Hitler playbook. The judges in Germany tried to stop things that Hitler was doing. They tried to say, you're not allowed to do that. The chancellor is not imbued with the power to do that. And he said, Hitler, there's this quote where Hitler was like, well, if the judges are doing things that are not in the national interest in the country, then it's my duty to go over the heads of the judges. And that is what Trump is doing. Like, it is just beat for beat, word for word, step for step, the Nazi playbook. You're not irrational or or crazy at all to be terrified of that. Don't let anybody tell you that. Those are the people who are telling you that you need to shut up and stop talking about the comet that's heading for the planet. This person says, Trump needed his own militarized police force loyal to him only. That's Dictator 101, and you are spot on. They are his Gestapo. We've been calling them that all year long, and people are like, ICE isn't the Gestapo. Yes, the fuck they are. They are his personal army, loyal to him and him alone. Anybody who works for ICE is a fuck-ass coward, a piece of shit, and an absolute traitor. If you work for ICE, fuck you. You're a terrible person. If you're married to somebody who works for ICE, divorce them. If you don't divorce them, fuck you. You're a fuck-ass coward and a terrible person too. That's how it is. That's how it is. If you work for ICE, fuck you. They are the Gestapo. Again, it's terribly unsubtle. It's beat for beat. It's word for word. You're not overreacting. If anything, we are all drastically underreacting. I think that's it for me. I'm sweaty. I've yapped enough. I think I made my point. We had a nice back and forth here. If you would like to watch the full unedited version of this podcast where I do the full talk back with the TikTok Digital Studio audience, you can find that on patreon.com/AustinArcher, where you're going to get bonus content, early posting. Shout out to the Patreon patrons. You guys are the wind beneath my wings. Truly, the work that, honestly, I really do believe this. People who are able to contribute to channels that are advocating for stuff right now, you're doing important work. And I know that not everybody is financially capable of it, but those of you who are helping out, who are chipping in, it matters so much right now. It is a form of resistance, and it's important. It's a way that we fight back. It's a way that we continue to get the message out. So thank you so much. Patreon.com/AustinArcher if you want bonus content, if you want early content, all that good stuff. That's it for the show. Thank you to the TikTok Digital Studio audience for your feedback, your comments. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. You can find more of my music by going to austin-archer.com. You can find my music videos that I direct and choreograph and all my fun stuff over there. Or you can just look up Austin Archer wherever you stream music if you want to go listen to some of those tunes. Ways to support the show, linked in the description on this video. Check that out. Okay, that's it. Good talk. Until next time, take care of yourselves, take care of each other. Love you so much. Bye-bye.